Welcome, everybody. Thanks for your promptness, each of you. We're all here. Can I get maybe a mute for the background noise, especially if somebody's on a cell phone or a computer phone? If somebody's on a cell phone or a computer phone, I need a mute. Thanks. That's great. Well, let's do a check-in, and Diane then is going to do a roadmap before we move into our material. WIMS and progress notes. How are you guys doing with our next to last seminar here? Are you feeling a sense of mastery and that you're getting it? Or the
most definitely.
Okay, all right.
Dave, I just wish I had this about 15 years ago. It would have been great.
Me too. Okay. Well, great. I'm glad you're finding it useful. Are there things that you still have questions about or things that we haven't covered and it doesn't look like we're going to cover that that would be helpful for us to address or for me to look at and add next time?
So next week is our last class, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And we've covered wellness. And what I'm thinking about is going back and instead of picking up, you know, we covered money story and we've kind of been covering it. What I'm thinking about doing, and I wanted to get an idea from each of you, is to look at something that might be more applicable to your practice. It's something that I've prepared for a mastermind group. That is our last mastermind group, and I wanted to offer a kind of a composite of this for our last class and leaving plenty of time for discussion about this and other matters, but looking at really the psychology of influence, the science of persuasion, and the neuroscience of selling, you know, to really look at practical aspects of developing a practice and apply some of these issues to persuasion, influence, and selling, because there's an incredible literature that is waiting to be applied, I think, to coaching in this. So tell me what you think. Does this sound like something you'd be interested in, or would you rather talk more about the application of the tools and methods and principles that we've been doing, look more at doing a case or cases or present something that's particularly been challenging to you or some combination?
I think maybe a combination would be nice.
Okay.
I think that I also think having some just conversations among ourselves to share our weaknesses or our strengths, I think, you know, could moving forward be a benefit. You know, because I think we have a varied group, and that in itself is interesting. You know, and then also just saying, hey, I could really use some help on this or some clarity. You know, I think that a little bit of time for that might be terrific also.
Well, thanks for that input. I really value that, and it totally makes sense because we haven't had nearly enough time to really talk about your practices, your situations, and to have a true seminar format because there's so much that I wanted to present and give you. So that this might be a good way to do that and to keep it open. I'll prepare some if you're interested in it, but really look at keeping it open to discussion and kind of making it a mix. Other thoughts and other votes?
I agree with that. I think a combination would be beneficial.
Okay. All right. Super. Super. So be ready with any challenges or cases or just things that you'd like us to brainstorm about as a group in terms of either, you know, practice, marketing, developing issues or particular issues with cases.
I think that's a terrific idea. Also, you know, maybe at some point having some collaboration too is really terrific idea.
Okay.
you know, based on what, you know, people's backgrounds or whatever. It's really always nice to know somebody that's in a field and has a different level of expertise.
Yeah. And it sounds like, from what I know and have gathered, that each of you will be developing your practices and your coaching firms in some different ways. And I think it'll be useful, especially, to really learn more about that and what your ideas are and any challenges you'd like us to brainstorm or kind of mastermind here, but also just so that everyone will know for referral purposes, because you're not ever going to know anyone else who's done training as well as within our own group. So I think that could be very beneficial for everyone. Any other thoughts or input? What about anything you'd like to discuss now? Any challenges, either from the reading or from your work with clients, or just anything that has been crystallized by any of the process so far that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, I really, again, I love the idea of having more, you know, other questions that people have utilized. I think just, you know, that's just so nice to have, you know. Because sometimes, you know, if it's been used before and it works really well, I think that's always great to just have those types of resources familiar.
Okay.
You know, to share among ourselves.
Okay.
You know, some clients are very, or some people in general are very open, and other people are really closed. And you know, sometimes it's how something is worded that really gets someone to open up.
Would you agree to send around the questions that you sent to me? I have them printed. I haven't had a chance to really seriously look at them, but it looks like a terrific addition. Would you mind sending those around to everyone?
Sure. I'll be happy to do that. I think I have everyone's name on an email that you've sent.
Uh-huh.
So,
yes.
I'll go ahead and send it, and if someone doesn't get the questions, if you just want to let Dave know, I might have typed your name in wrong or something.
Okay, great.
But I'll send that out.
That'll be an interesting discussion in itself.
Yeah, even if we had a group email, I mean, that's so great just to, you know, to have that. So if we, as time goes on, if we want to send something, you know, it's just, you send it to, like, you know, sort of, you reply all. Do you know that type of thing?
Uh-huh.
Those are nice. That's really nice to have. I had done that with another group.
You have that, and you have a copy of the initial roster with a name,
mm-hmm,
and email. Okay. All right, good. Great. What else would you like to discuss before we go to the roadmap?
I think I just have one question, and that is to everyone that's on the call. Who is looking to move into a coaching practice that isn't already doing it?
I would like to, yet I think I need to couple it with something else.
Okay.
But, yes, you know, I would. I think that, you know, I just, for a variety of different reasons, need to integrate it with you know, doing something else to that I'm going to combine it with.
Would you share more of your thinking about that and your strategy about that, and maybe we can, you know, log in on anything that might be helpful?
Mm-hmm. I think I'll just do it when I finish my roadmap. Is that okay? Or would you like
me
to do it now?
No, that's great. Sure.
Okay.
Whatever will work for you, and we'll allow time to discuss.
I can share that my goal is to phase down my real estate practice and phase up a coaching practice. Now, initially, my goal was to coach young professionals, and what the Money Story platform allows me to do is broaden that, because a lot of times young professionals are very concerned and interested about their ability to generate revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Through commissions, and so, you know, this actually ties in quite nicely on my my goals. And in my practice, it's going to be hard shut down after 35 years of doing the same thing. But my goal is to transition this over the next couple of years. I'd like for it to be shorter, and if I can, I'll do that. But right now, probably over the next couple of years, phase down, phase up.
Thanks.
I was just curious. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just curious because since we've been together all this time now, it would be nice if we could continue on a relationship with each other and perhaps help each other out as we're moving forward into coaching practice.
That'd be great for
Absolutely.
Me.
So I'll send out the series of powerful questions, and then you'll have my email address for sure. And if I can ever help in any way, I'd just like to make myself available for that.
Terrific. And, after we stop, each of you keep in mind that I am here to help you develop your practices. If there's anything that I can do or any way that I can be of help to you, I hope you'll let me know. We'll have the ongoing contact, at least the quarterly mentor groups. But any of you, feel free to email me, and I'll mention next time a strategy about going forward in terms of the registry and some other things that I want to mention and remind you of, but I'll save a bit of time to do that next time, but to look at going forward and some things that that I have in mind that might help your practices. So we'll do that next time.
Dave, the other thing that I think would be great if, you know, we could do this next time also, if there's any other platforms that you're aware of that people are doing successfully, anything new or different, I think that would be a great thing for us to kind of just to know about.
I want to be sure what you mean by platforms.
One of the things that you mentioned was, by referral. That's typically the way that this works. So you perhaps have some marketing or whatever, but if anyone is coaching in a way that is different than that, it would be great to raise our awareness about what other approaches we could take to, get more clients. I mean, Chris, you may already have, for instance, like a lot of clients that you can kind of segue into doing this, but that the finding new clients and, finding a specific market for this, I'm just wondering if anyone else has any other ideas of where you gather that pool.
Okay. Let me just initiate a discussion of that, because you're really talking about building a platform, building a group of people who are regular followers of you. And you've heard me say before, if I were to begin today with coaching, the first thing I would do way before doing a website is that I would begin with a blog that is branded, that is specific, that has an editorial calendar, that has a focus on a particular area that I'm interested in, that I want to learn more about, and that will intersect with the potential clients that I may see. And I would learn about the optimization of that blog going viral, such as doing Google alerts for related subjects and the blogs that will be on that daily email for that, going to those blogs, listening and learning to what other people are doing, commenting on those blogs, referring back to mine, being sure that the blog is picked up by search engines that are specific for blogs. You've heard me say at least a couple of times that it took me 4 months to get the following for my blog that it took me 4.5 years to get for a newsletter. So what you want to do is develop a following. A blog is a way of doing that. That way you can announce whatever the next step is. If you want to do a free teleseminar or a paid teleseminar series, you can announce it from the blog. You can announce it to your email list. You want to do whatever you need to do to grow your email list our series, you want to look at what your next offering is, products or services. So, you know, look at building it. The first thing that the very well-known marketing expert who I consulted some time ago said is, don't begin with the end product. You know, don't begin with a several thousand dollar training that you want to do. Begin with some small thing that gets someone in the pipeline. Sell an ebook for $2.95. Get someone in the pipeline and build from there. Go to then a seminar or a teleseminar series or a webinar. Then go to a next step. Then offer something or do a free ebook or you know, build. You know, what you want to do is to build your marketing list. One of my buddies who's an executive coach who makes several thousand bucks a day said, Dave, I will give away my book, and it's a hard copy book, in order to get an email address, because he's looking at high-end people, and he will give away a book to get an email address, because what he does, a couple of things we've done together, are retreats that are in the high six to the high four to five figures for a weekend. So look at building things to an ultimate result. Look at where you want to go and back into that. So an email is the equity of the real of the internet. So what you want to do in terms of developing that, and as you know, as Chris knows, he has a group of people who follow him, who are already there. That low-hanging fruit will be the people to first contact and let them know that he is opening a mentor coaching practice, and to describe what he does to the specific group of people and develop it from there. Look at who your contacts, your relationships are already with. Referrals come through relationships, not through advertising, not through constructing a website. They come from relationships. Now, you may build relationships and get a following, as in a blog, but first mine the gold. First mine the relationships you already have and let them know what you're doing. Do things for them so that they get a very good idea of what you do. You know, the first thing I did when I moved into exclusively a coaching practice was to send a letter of announcement to the people who already had been referring to me for therapy and analytic patients, and then let them know what I was doing now and what coaching was and what I'd be doing with the people that referred me. They referred people, and they referred themselves then to me. And that began the initial phase of what I did. It was developing relationships, people I already knew. So think about doing that. Think about, and some of you have heard me talk about this already, schedule a brainstorming session with yourself. Set aside 45 minutes, no interruptions, no interference, an appointment you keep with yourself, just like you keep an appointment with a doc, and brainstorm all the people who you know. All the contacts, all the associations, the affiliation, the people you know, from personal to business to church to networking through groups, write those down and then create a hierarchy of a dozen or so at a time that you send a letter of announcement, letting them know what you do, and then do a follow-up call to see if there are any questions. One of the things I'm going to send you after the last class, there's a bunch of stuff I want to send you, but one of the things is it's a sample press release. There's nothing magical about the press release, but it's just a reminder to do a press release for a local or regional paper, for your town's business journal, like here, the Houston Business Journal, in Dallas for Chris, the Dallas Business Journal, letting them know you have completed a licensed specialty certified training. And then let them know what you do. And some accept a picture. So there are a number of things just to begin to think about what you want to do. There's going to be a registry that I'm going to send you a link for to put your picture, your specialty, your contact information. So all those things are things to really begin to think about doing, many of you have already, to really develop and enhance your practice. Charge what you're worth, and it will be repaid many times over. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, without a doubt, you know, to really look at the different groups that you're already affiliated with and to do a press release or to really start to get some public relations out there and, you know, define yourself.
You know, I think each of you will bring immense value to people, and there's no reason that you shouldn't also bring that value to yourself beyond the creative invigoration that you do in the sense of contribution. I think you can easily make $300,000 to $500,000 a year. There's no reason not to. The first to break the stunned silence.
I agree.
Okay, all right then.
I agree.
Okay, great. If that's your goal, and if you want to do, I mean, I'm not even talking about working 40 hours a week. I'm talking about doing what you enjoy, doing leveraged work, and individual work where you charge what you're worth. Let's move to, let's pick up right here next time so that we can move into Diane's presentation for Roadmap.
Okay. All right. I have to say, I would have preferred to do someone else, but they didn't have the time. So, you know what, unfortunately, it's me.
So you stepped up.
And I stepped up, but happy to put, you know, I'm moving beyond this one, but this was a tough one. I sort of had to go back a little deep, but it's okay. Okay, so my money story is I'm the sixth from a family of nine children from the suburbs of New York. I was raised within a structured environment with much love, warmth, and discipline. As a young child, I learned the value of money early on and often did the family grocery shopping and meal planning. Even now, I can really create a very good meal with a very few ingredients that surprises people. Coming from a large family environment played great importance on communication, meal times, problem solving, and helping others whose needs exceeded our own. We shared our gifts and talents with others. Of course, at times, more money was necessary for our family's needs, certainly prior to credit cards. We always had lots of fun, and each of us contributed to our own needs without expecting more from our parents. It was never a thought in my head to go and ask my parents for something that I thought I could get. So early as 10, I babysat. I worked throughout high school. While studying business in college in New Orleans, I was provided with many working opportunities in the food and hospitality industry, which was necessary to contribute towards my education. After returning to the New York area, I had a successful sales career with very large companies, including Xerox and ADP. Some years were better than others, but I always managed to save, and I also purchased stocks with a friend from college guidance early on. In my 20s, I made my first real estate purchase. Several years later, I began studying interior design in the evenings after work, and eventually I transitioned to working as a decorator in Manhattan and then later closer to home. Although marrying an only child with a successful family business would seem like a dream come true, I quickly saw that our money styles were just completely different. I had renovated a small home and we needed a yard, so I built a home here in Connecticut where I now reside. It was quite a challenge staying within our budget, but I was really creative, and I did this. I did it with great results. So soon afterwards, we had a third and a fourth child, which added much joy but lots of work with four children in 7 years. So at this point, my spouse had worked about 6 days a week, and he was now working 7 days a week. So although I assisted and supported a success plan for this family business, its expansion at this point was really poor timing. Unfortunately, he was rather grandiose in adding a fourth location, and my concerns about really not financing so heavily were pretty disregarded. Soon, the financial implications were coupled as well as the effects of 9/11. Being very close to Manhattan, it was very different than perhaps the perception you may have in other parts of the country, but it was significant here, business loss, et cetera. Additionally, there were real estate holdings that were purchased by the city of New York, which caused uncertainty and the need for a plan ahead. My involvement in the business became more significant, and although I made many strategic changes to reposition the business and hopefully for a sale down the road, this became interrupted with a very serious car accident that I was in. And as a result, I was unable to return to my prior position and because I really needed rehab, et cetera, and my children really needed to be taken care of. They were, they had some post-traumatic stress, et cetera, also. So anyway, the plan that I had put in place was really disregarded, and, money which was from the real estate holdings was just poured into this business with no plan at this point and no accountability. So ultimately, when I saw what was going on and I saw that perhaps at some point I should just find a buyer for this, there was just no logic. It was insane. Literally every month, $100,000 was just lost with no plan to kind of like, it was insanity. I couldn't deal with it. So it was very, very stressful. So what I decided to do or decide what to change, I knew that, my spouse at the time and his dad, they just could not deal with shutting the door. They just couldn't deal with change, and they had no plan. And at this point, I just thought the only thing to do was it needs to go away. I mean, as opposed to my spouse was trying to get the equity in our house. He was borrowing pretty much anywhere that he could. It was kind of scary. And I just said, no, I just can't deal with this anymore. I mean, if there was a plan and accountability, but I had sort of watched about $3 million just be literally flushed down the toilet. And I thought, no, these people do not know what they're doing. And I just did not really have the time and the ability to manage my, sort of four young children and go back to this area of the Bronx, which was not particularly nice anyway. I mean, it was kind of scary, actually. So anyway, what I did, the company was basically bankrupt. The assets and the inventory, I arranged a sale to two partners, and I arranged for a job contract for my spouse, for 5 years. Anyway, several years later, they filed bankruptcy, which was withheld from me on purpose, so I kind of stumbled upon it. And anyway, as a result of that, I hired a financial advisor, hoping to kind of work through this mess so we could kind of move ahead and figure out what to do. But I didn't really get honest information, so it wasn't very collaborative. So anyway, when you're in a storm like this for a long time, you really just hope for time that it will be over so you can really start again. And I thought that I had actually done that with, moving, this mess that had gone on for really at least 10 to 12 years. But even after that happened, there was just no, there was just not real communication. There was just a lot of anger, a lot of anger. So, you know, then I realized that, you know, the business itself isn't a problem. The money's not the problem. The problem is somebody doesn't want to solve their problems and move forward. So I had worked towards having some assets that I knew of, you know, my house, for instance, things that I had done myself, kind of preserved. I didn't really want equity loans, and I did what I could to maintain credit, things of that nature, on my own, and because I had to put, you know, I had to call and say, no, this is restricted. You know, I just had to do that because I was dealing with someone that would just really get money wherever he could get it with no plan. So anyway, what I did ultimately, I'm sure you all know the end of this, but I had to move towards divorce, which I did very quickly, and I just sort of said, okay, you know, that's I just need to move on. I really needed to protect my children. My children were, you know, getting to be college age, and I needed a plan for them, and they needed a plan, and they needed a stable household. So that was what I did. And, again, after a variety of circumstances, I was trying to figure out what to do next, because I'm now raising, you know, all of these children sort of on my own with all their schedules. So what I began doing was to do some trading with in the stock market. I had a little background with it before, but I really consolidated some accounts that I had with Schwab because it was 24 hours, which was really terrific because they have a lot of education and they have seminars, and I could also do it at 1 in the morning or, you know, when I had time. So it has been a process, and in the past 3 years, I've been on my own. I have taken good care of my most important assets, which are my children, my home, and I had taken some money and I had invested it in the market. Initially, I got some help, some local help, and then I soon realized that I'm not quite sure we were on the same page because, you know, I quickly did not make any money. I was losing money, and I had been very clear about the fact that I needed income. So anyway, the changes that I began to implement were that I just began to do this on my own. I started to understand the markets. I started looking at different stocks, bonds, et cetera, and I thought, you know what, I could do this myself for less fees, and I could also have flexibility in doing it at different times of the day and night. So, and I needed income, obviously. So what I have done is I have really created an income source for myself. I have a small retirement portfolio now, and I actually have a separate savings plan so that I can move to my next home. And each of the portfolios has different goals and objectives, different risk factors. And although this has been time and energy consuming, it's given me the flexibility to educate myself and work around my children's school and activity schedule, which is really important for their development and consistency. So I'm very lucky. The market has done very well, and I've done really well also. I'm really grateful for the experience because I've been able to learn going forward about it. And the information that we learned in this was particularly useful because I understand the anxiety. I understand everything that we learned about, and it was very nerve-wracking, to say the least, to have a plan and, you know, not to react when things were falling, et cetera. So, like I said, years ago it would have been better to know, but I really did have a plan, and I was very careful of watching things but not overreacting because I just had to do that, you know. So so the plan that we have learned, it's very useful. I've seen what a mess can be created when there isn't a vision. I lived in it, you know. So I'm implementing certain tools for myself in collaboration with others that are successful each portfolios, including real estate. So I have reflected upon the other passions that I have and the other interests, and I would really like to integrate money coaching with other interests of real estate as well as design. I think many people struggle with all of this on the way up, and then as our nests get emptied on the way down. So I myself am looking forward to a smaller home within the next year, and the reduced expenses and the energy they require. I'd like to travel more, and I look forward to finding other advisors to collaborate with as people move on with their life and their next step. In particular, I think the youth, I think are really at a disadvantage these days, including my own children. And so part of this for me has been to educate them. So moving forward, they do well financially. So, you know, I've started to do that. And, I think that particular group, is a great market for me. You know, in particular, I was just looking for some statistics today I had handy. I think we as a nation spend $2 educating youth between like 20 and 30 versus, let me find this specifically, I'm sorry, $54, which is really what financial companies have targeted to get them to use credit cards and to get them to buy things that they don't need. So they are at such a disadvantage in today's world to figure out how to move ahead. It's really scary. I mean, it is. I know many, not even just here, but I know personally, the bankruptcy rate for that particular age is the highest of anyone. So, you know, moving forward, I love the idea that they can make a plan, and most of them will want a home or furnishings, but they'll have to do it in a budget, and it needs to be something that is that's really part of their life, of what they want, because everyone does really need a home and want a home, and they want to do well. But I think this particular roadmap is so terrific in helping them create rules for themselves to keep themselves safe financially, but to also give them a vision. Years ago, I sat next to a friend when I first worked at Xerox his friend's dad had actually started Charles Schwab, which I think is a great organization for a variety of different reasons. One of them is Charles Schwab was dyslexic, and when my son needed a special school, this whole thing, I went to his website and I actually determined that I was going to keep him in public school based on what he wanted to do and based on articles in his website about it. So I think that they educate people for free. I mean, if you give them some money, I've learned so much. It's amazing. So I think there's a lot of information out there going forward, but when I did speak with them, there's not enough money in this particular group that anyone is really taking care of them. You know, banks don't want – nobody wants them. They just want to make money on their ignorance most of the time, you know. So I don't know. I find that particular group is at a disadvantage, I think, in society, and I think moving ahead is going to be much more challenging for them with all the restrictions from banks, et cetera, that learning how to use, you know, money properly and having a plan is something that I don't see many people out there really tapping into that particular group of people. So I think it's interesting.
For you then in moving into money coaching?
Yes, and what I was talking about before, I thought, you know what, they're also really savvy on the internet and creating, you know, groups that they help each other and support each other as they learn, you know, about budgeting, about finance, but even about what we learn. Like, we learn so much about how our brains work that collectively to reinforce one another, this is one of the things that this particular age group does. They really support each other. And
okay,
if you give them the tools.
To summarize in a minute or so your conclusion so that we'll have a bit of time to discuss some of the topic material. I really like your presentation. And can you wrap it within a minute or so?
Yep. No, I'm done. That is really where I think there's a niche market.
Okay.
I think it's necessary, and I think that they also could be part of a web-based learning system with mentoring. And you know, I don't know of anyone that is really tapping into that particular age group.
That's true. And online learning and various kinds of content marketing may be very, very useful application for you. Thank you very much. That's a very specific and broad-ranging possibility moving from roadmap into practice. Any questions or thoughts or reflections about Diane's presentation?
Very good.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you very much for some very opening comments. I mean, very opening our minds and looking at different systems and applications. So be interesting to see what you do. I think you have some great ideas and a terrific experience of sharing so much of your story and what you've done and your journey. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, Chris, just quickly just back to you, what I'm sure you have gone through is so valuable moving forward. So one of the ideas that I have, you know, just quickly is having guest speakers really talk about what they know about real estate, you know, and some of that is so terrific, especially for people that are just always thinking ahead, like, do I do it, do I not do it, what's, you know. So your background from real estate is such an asset to move ahead in a coaching practice. So that might be something, you know, we could collaborate on going forward.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to leveraging that as best I can. That's really where I'm hoping that the base of my clients can come from.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you know this, but whether it's the stock market or whether it's real estate, it's where you are in the cycle. So it's always going to be out there. So it's just trying to figure out, you know, when people move into it, when people move out of it, and what are the parameters that they should look at. I think that's where people get into trouble.
Okay.
Well, being completely new to coaching, as Dave knows, I mean, I need all the ideas and, you know, to have an effective practice.
Well, I think we all do. Yet having this tool is terrific because we know how effective it is. And with some of our stories, we know that without the accountability, without somebody really understanding money, and that it's a mess, you know. It's an addiction. They just can't stop, you know. So
let me try to bring some of our discussion and the material that we've looked at over time together in talking about success paradigms. And if there's any that I don't get to in this remaining time, I'll dictate and send it around to you because there are some aspects, some fundamental things that I want to cover. Now, as you know, the brain is a very efficient machine that is not wasting. Simplicity is to take the path of least resistance. To use neurons already familiar with the task. And the brain, as you know, inclines toward repeating the old story. So this is how neurons and neural pathways are laid down in the brain. Early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, and even if they're circuitous routes. So that means when a client is resistant to not take it personally, they're frustrated too. They're in this groove automatically. They're in a groove, together you can create a path. To think creatively, new neural pathways need to be developed outside the cycle of experience. Stimulation for new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus. new information, a new context. I want to focus specifically in terms of our work in mentor coaching on decision clarification first, because I think this brings together a lot of concepts that we've talked about in various ways in a practical application. Let me give you a study to indicate an illustration of this. If you have some background noise, if you would mute, and I want to keep the line open, because if there are any questions or comments, don't hesitate to interrupt me. A couple of researchers at West Virginia University devised a study that ran ads indicating that one glass of whole milk has the same amount of saturated fat as five strips of bacon. At a press conference, they showed reporters a tube full of fat, the equivalent of the amount of a half gallon of whole milk. By making healthy choices specific and tangible, the market share of low-fat milk moved from 18 to 41%. In other words, they moved eating healthily from an admirable goal, something abstract, to a specific choice and behavior. So when we want to help someone affect change, we need to help script specific behaviors to help them enhance active decision-making by limiting and specifying very clear options, because change always has to begin at the level of individual decisions and specific behavior. So here are some leading reasons that people resist change. And I believe understanding these reasons is an initial step or tool for the mentor coach. One is ambiguity aversion. The risk of change is seen as greater than the risk of standing still. People prefer a known risk to an unknown risk, even if the known risk is high. To make a change requires a leap of faith. It's a move in the direction of the unknown and the unexperienced. You have no proof. Secondly, people feel connected to other people identified with the present situation. And change then threatens losing those identified with the old way. This resonates with emotional bonds of loyalty as well as individual status quo and group inertia. Plus, there may be no new role models for the new activity, or at least mentors who have been there before. To surpass those who have been both mentors and colleagues is challenging. Additionally, you can't know you have the competence for a new situation that you've never been in before. There may be subtle but a pervasive fear that people are concerned that they won't be able to make the transition really well, just because you don't know. Additionally, the proposed change threatens not only people's notions of themselves, but also how they're perceived by others and whether others will respond with support or a competitive jealousy. So, narrow the choices. Remember the jam tasting study. Decide what good enough is and narrow the choice to fit that goal. So, a caveat here is always consider whether the proposed change is a good idea or not. Sometimes focusing on the dynamics of change and the transition process can blur good judgment about whether it's a really good idea that needs to be fully engaged or not. And especially those who automatically see change as a challenge or idealize change may not carefully consider this notion. Let's look at revisiting the notion of shrinking the change. The experience of reaching attainable short-term goals creates the experience of effectiveness, the basic motivation for us as humans. This experience of mastery builds on itself. The strategic application of the series of next best action to pursue an initiative toward a SMART goal is a fundamental mission of mentoring strategy, facilitating steps of effectiveness, the experience of mastery, and early successes engineers hope. From Bill Parcells and the Harvard Business Review on winning two Super Bowls, when you set small, visible goals and people achieve them, they start to get into their heads that they can succeed. And from John Wooden, the greatest basketball coach of all time, when you improve a little each day, eventually big things occur. Don't look for the quick, big improvement. Seek the small improvements one day at a time. That's the only way it happens. And when it happens, it lasts. That's his quote. Here are two fundamental applications of shrinking the change. This is a quote from Dave Kruger. Investing $1.50 per day beginning at age 20, based on the stock market average growth since 1926, by age 65, will be worth $1 million. Wait until age 21 instead of 20. The difference is $109,000. Another, investing $2,000 a year in an IRA beginning at age 18, then stopping all investment after age 30, never investing another penny, by age 65 will be worth $1 million. Shrink the change. Be consistent. Another thing that I especially want to focus on is adaptation to success. It's something that each of you will experience in increasing ways as you get even more successful. Even though you've been immensely successful in many ways, let's think about the adaptation to even greater success. Success is never final. Don't get complacent. Testing is as important as postulating. Test ideas out. Revise them. Make it your story told with your voice. One reason to be very clear about your needs and ideals and to have a clear idea of your story is to deal with success, and I would say with massive success. It's at least as challenging to deal with success as it is with adversity or scarcity. In most cases, more so. And this is especially for clients who you'll work with who have been significantly successful, who need coaches, not to get successful, but to deal with their success. And my prediction is each of you will have a new level of success you haven't had before to be ready for. The writer F. Scott Fitzgerald had just completed his novel, This Side of Paradise. He was riding high, a successful writer in every aspect. He had just married a beautiful wife, had a storybook life. Then he said, riding in a taxi one afternoon between very tall buildings, I began to bawl. I had everything I wanted, and I knew I would never be so happy again. The problem, he felt, is that every story must end. It was his experience as a storyteller. He then descended into depression and alcoholism and died an early death. He did not know how to continue writing his story of success. Elvis became the story of success, but it was not that story that brought him to success, but he identified with the success story and lost himself in it. His true story ended as he lay cold on the bathroom floor at age 42, full of drugs and the trappings of success. Two guys who needed mentor coaches not to become successful, but to deal with success. Failure and success are both stories, external stories about events, meaning that you have to continue with efforts and change to sustain success. Either story, failure or success, can change. It can continue, grow, or end. To continue with a success story is to continue doing that created the success. Once you arrive at success, you can't stop doing the things that created the success and only inhabit the success story. The things having to do with success itself and enjoyment, in other words. Soon then, success will wither and the story will change. You can become defined by the story. And once again, to reiterate, it's not wealth, position, possessions, or even a chase of happiness that creates problems. It's when you lose yourself in the chase. So one thing I want to emphasize again and revisit is is just a brief story to illustrate. One night on a camping trip, Sherlock Holmes wakes up Watson and says, "Look at the stars. What do you deduce?" Watson thinks for a minute and says, "Well, I see millions of stars, many of which resemble our sun, which most likely have their own planets, which most likely have life forms like us. So I deduce that there's life on other planets." And Sherlock said, "Now, you idiot, somebody's stolen our tent." Now, consider each of these paradigms as a conditioned response to certain stimuli. You're going to hear each of these from clients. Genetic determinism. Your genes are doing it to you. It's an inherited trait fashioned by long-standing DNA copy. If you're Irish, that adds to your temper. Psychic determinism. Your parents did it to you. Environmental determinism. Your boss or your spouse or the economy is doing it to you. The antithesis of each of these paradigms of determination is mastery within our own system of authority. And remember this. What remains unconscious will emerge most likely as fate. And that's why we want to be aware of our operating system, 90 or 95% of which are unconscious. Because that which we don't become aware of and don't become conscious of, most likely to emerge as fate. Our fears are not made fully conscious until we go for our dreams. That's the paradox. Mastery takes time. Don't skip any steps. Decide what you want to measure in order to achieve your total goals. You have to measure what you want more of. And I hear this every time over the PA system, every afternoon when I'm working out in LA Fitness. What gets measured gets improved. But they're right, which is why they keep repeating it. Now, I want to look with you at some principles of facilitating successful change. This is really a reiteration, but it's also a compilation and kind of a condensation of it, to review some principles that focus on facilitating successful change. One, each person's life story is created. In adulthood, you create whatever you think, feel, and express each moment. Every day is a blank page till you begin writing on it, even though it may seem to each individual to be just the way things are. Two, knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. And you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Three, when people create their own answers, they have signed on to invest in the outcome. This establishes the beginning of a sense of effectiveness and mastery. And that's why we begin each coaching session with getting the client to take ownership of that session. What would you like us to focus on during this session? And to take ownership mutually for the outcome. What would you like to walk away with? This establishes the beginning of effectiveness and mastery. The antithesis, somebody tells you what to do. Four, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. Assumptions manifest as beliefs and behaviors. When you make assumptions explicit, you can learn more clearly which facilitate and which interfere with your goals. Five, change is constant and inevitable. It's the resistance to change that generates most problems. Six, small changes lead to big changes. Issues that may seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable may need to be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue in order to specify progress. For example, when you feel overwhelmed with the amount of tasks, first clarify one issue that if done today would be progress, would give you traction. This focuses on a specific action to exercise effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Seven, problems, causes, and solutions are not always related or even interconnected. To resolve a problem, even emotionally, to come to the end of the past, does not create a blueprint for success. That's why there are a lot of frustrated therapy refugees. Strategic plans for specific goals are necessary. If something is a totally new experience, you may need a guide, even for something like a healthier diet, or exercise, or financial advice. 8, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't will become evident and self-perpetuating. 9, you need to know where you're going, goals and strategies. Setting a goal, as you know, will enhance motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. The end should be in mind in the beginning. Lewis Carroll said this very succinctly. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" responded the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." 10, you need the correct paradigm. A paradigm is an internal map, the way you see, interpret, and understand something. It needs to be correct. And often the paradigm is determined by correctly labeling the feeling or the situation to boot up the right map. If you're in Dallas and need to navigate the city, a map of Houston is useless no matter how hard you try. An old map of Dallas may be worse than useless and may misdirect you. It needs to be current, not a paradigm from an old story. 11, decide what you want. Believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. Just like the filter on a camera alters the image that gets recorded by the camera. We now know that beliefs themselves, just a belief, can actually turn a gene on or turn it off. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. Here's a brief story that illustrates this. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. She couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to tell it. She decided to write. As soon as she started writing, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in a divorce. She has a miscarriage. She gets fired from her job and lives on government welfare. She takes her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and writes on a legal pad while her baby takes a nap. She does this every day for 4 years. And then, after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. So, as we look at a new operating system, especially for wealth. You're aware of how computers have operating systems, just to revisit an earlier notion. Within the hardware and comprising the programs is a complex system of software that contains instructions, protocols, couplings that enable the system to function smoothly. Usually, we only think about the operating systems when there are problems or failings. Our society has its own operating system of laws, customs, social and economic arrangements that comprise protocols and assumptions of how we conduct ourselves. Now, consider that downloads operate smoothly within a system, but if there's failure of the operating system or if the downloads are faulty, they don't work. Glitches in the system of wisdom creating wealth. So, some of these can be the belief systems, thinking that if you're not born with money, you may never have money, equating education with an entitlement to wealth, assuming that book smart will make you street smart, focusing on rich, forgetting about wealth, focusing on making and spending money rather than on making your money work for you, assumptions that can be limiting, like not seeing yourself as capable of making a lot of money, results in not making a lot of money. And the application, the operating systems need to be updated with various aspects of marketing, of developing your practice, charging what you're worth, the number of things that we touched on earlier today. Be clear about exactly what you're doing and the programs that you're writing. For example, remember two myths. Money buys happiness. Wealth doesn't matter. And consider this question. If you had an endless supply of money, how would you live your life differently? A couple of things I want to... let me mention one thing, and then I want to talk about the last stages of success as a wrap-up. One is future self-identification. And I consider this really important. I think each of you have looked at this, but I want to illustrate it in a particular way. A study by Princeton psychologist Emily Cronin found that in making financial decisions, especially how much money we put away toward retirement, depends on how closely we identify with our future selves. Brain imaging reveals that the greater activity in an area of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex is activated when we imagine ourselves in the future. This is the part of the brain that actively synthesizes our sense of self. And the greater we have a way to envision our future selves, the more money we save. She found that people save 2 to 3 times as much money when they can envision their future selves. Now, there's a study that is underway at Stanford that they're manipulating this by computer-enhanced images, and the early results are they're finding significant results in looking at age-enhanced progression of someone's self-image, their face and their body, that people who look at an age-enhanced version of themselves will begin saving 2 to 4 times more money because they now can picture themselves. And looking at what age progression does if you smoke, if you don't smoke, if you work out, if you don't, if you gain weight, if you don't. So looking at the consequences both ways of a number of fundamental behaviors is showing some significant benefit. And I want to have an exercise with you in just a moment to maybe illustrate this. But to kind of summarize here, the life stages of success, and this is moving from the wide-angle lens to time-lapse photography. And I want to just offer a quote which says it way more succinctly than I can, some of the different stages of life, because success may mean different things at different points in adult life, at each developmental phase. Here's how it can look in a relationship. And this is from Ruby D, I Dream a World. It takes a long time to be really married. One marries many times at many levels in a marriage. If you have more marriages than divorces within the marriage, you're lucky and you stick it out. Here's a way of looking at individual success. This is from Goethe. Whoever in middle age attempts to realize the wishes and hopes of his early youth invariably deceives himself. Each 10 years of a person's life has its own fortune, its own hopes, its own desire. Dreams change, we realize some, relinquish some, create new ones. Growth is flexible and dynamic. And here's that time-lapse photo from a different perspective. From one of my favorite essayists, Emerson. Not in his goals, but in his transitions, man is great. So I want to do a final exercise with you. I'd like you to put your phones on mute, if you don't mind, and if you can find a way to tuck your phone between your chin and your shoulder if you don't have a headset so that you can have total hands-free. I'd like you to get in a very relaxed position, chair, and be sure and mute. There's nothing distracting in the background. Get in a very relaxed position. Breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. And be very aware of how relaxed you are in your chair. I'd like you to close your eyes and imagine you're 90 years old. Look back at yourself now. Look at how things will turn out on your present trajectory. How would they turn out on a different path? Does the difference between the two suggest a change, a transition? What kind? Be specific. From 90 looking back, what do you see that you might have really seen right now but didn't acknowledge? What do you feel about your situation now? And what do you want to tell yourself now? For example, any turns or caution or risks that you should have taken. Keep your eyes closed and look very carefully at your 90-year-old eyes. Your face, your hand, your 90-year-old body. Look around at where you are and at who's there with you. Remember, you always know more than you think. Gradually open your eyes and get centered and present. Speak only when you feel like it. Don't do it too quickly. Still have a couple of minutes to talk if anybody would like to add anything or say anything about your experience.
Made me realize the importance of enjoying the moment.
Ah. Yeah.
It made me respect the value of having a game plan.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, from a Zen perspective, teaches that we only have the present. The present is only a future anticipation. The past is only a present memory. We can only and ever be in the present. But we can definitely create a game plan from the present and have an orientation and compass for movement ahead. So the roadmap goes forward as well as understanding the present. Yeah, great points.
Pretty powerful exercise.
Good, I'm glad you found it useful. Well, thank you all very much, and I look forward very much to our next time. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
See you now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. See ya.
Thank you. Bye.